Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, I'm sorry. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is Marcy Hamilton. Marcy is an author, and she wrote a book called Justice Denied about children not getting justice in the system. So, Marcy, and we're here to talk about Spotlight. So, Marcy, were you excited and thrilled when Spotlight won the Best Picture?
Yes, I was. This was a really critical moment for the survivors movement, and it sent such a strong message that the American people are now behind the survivors and that the mainstream media really does get it.
Up until that time, up until the Boston Globe tried to uncover the scandals in Boston, were there other newspapers in any part of the country that figured there was a problem and they tried to uncover it? Would you say that happened?
There was a reporter in Milwaukee, and Marie Rohde, and she was right on top of this issue. And her newspaper, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, took her off that beat. And there were a couple of other stories of reporters on the beat covering it in various locations. But the one that was closest and the one that really would have broken the story before Boston was Milwaukee, but because the editors there didn't do the right thing, it didn't happen in Milwaukee. And what I love about Spotlight is it shows a reporter coming in, an editor coming in, and it's the editor that is forcing the reporters to go back and do the work even better than they had done before. And it usually it's the editors that were blocking these stories because they were fearful about their readership. And so the role played by Liev Schreiber cannot be overestimated in the importance of an editor saying, we're going to go into this whether it's pretty or not.
Now, you said fearful of their readership. Do you think they were also fearful of the hierarchy of the church?
Well, you know, my view has been that basically we've been dealing with men who are all on the A-list. And the A-list protects each other, at least until relatively recently. And so the heads of newspapers were chummy with the bishops, and the bishops were chummy with the police commissioners, and the system operated so that the men were all protecting each other's reputations. But what that meant is that no one was paying attention to the victims. And so the real point of Spotlight, it's not Catholic abuse. The real point is this is the paradigm of how adults in the United States have ignored child suffering and perpetuated it by protecting adults.
So when that Academy Award was presented last night, what was the message to America that that sent?
The message was that it is no longer taboo to criticize our religious leaders, our leaders in important institutions for covering up child sex abuse. Instead, it's time to look it straight in the eye and stop it. And that is that's been a very bitter pill for many Americans to swallow. But for me, the most important constituency listening to that message are state and federal legislators who must understand now, at least, that it is acceptable, it's a good thing to take the side of the victims rather than the side of the institution, because the institution was at wrong here. And I really do hope that states and the federal government, which have so much work to do to improve the laws for child sexual abuse victims, will understand that it is politically a good idea to side with the victims and not to side with the institutions that permitted these children to suffer.
Okay, let me ask you this. If a child was, whether it was a girl or a boy, if they were harmed by a priest and the criminal justice system did not help them. Now, here is a child that was wronged one way, and then they were being wronged by the judicial system. That's compounding injury on top of injury. From what you've seen, what are the effects of, after an abusive situation, they're being denied by the courts to get their justice?
I'm not sure if I understand your question.
Okay, the question is, after a child has been abused by a clergy, and then they did not get, they did not have their day in court, what are the ramifications for children who suffered at the hands of clergy and then ignored by the court?
Well, the problem for children abused by clergy, and especially in religious settings where the religious institution has permitted the child to suffer and has covered it up, those children not only grow up to have potentially severe post-traumatic stress disorder, depressive episodes, addictions to alcohol, substances, even sex addictions, all of these disorders arise out of losing the foundation of their lives. But they also, too frequently, lose their faith. And so they lose the foundation that might have supported them through healing from the event. And so for the religious victims, it's a double loss.
Okay. You know, this is such a horrific, horrific crime that I can't even wrap my head around it. It's difficult for me, being raised a Catholic. So had Spotlight not won the award last night, there would be less of public awareness of the problem.
Well, and the nice thing about the Academy Awards is there were three instances when sex assaults really were being focused on, not just Spotlight, but also Lady Gaga's performance, as well as the fact that it was pointing to a documentary on the issue. So there was tremendous awareness. But I do think that having been chosen as the movie of the year by the Academy sends a really loud message to legislators that it's safe now to take the side of the victims. But I also think even if they had not won Best Picture, having won Best Screenwriting, but also having won dozens of awards leading up to the Academy Awards, Spotlight was already well positioned to help change the issues for the better.
Now, this issue is a nationwide and probably a worldwide problem. Okay, now, because Spotlight won the Academy Award last night, will editors give their journalists the green light in pursuing sex abuse cases in their diocese, do you think?
Well, my hope is that editors not only see the necessity of opening up investigative reporting into Catholic Church abuse, but also that they open up investigation into abuse among the Latter-day Saints, among Jehovah's Witnesses, among Orthodox Jews and ultra-Orthodox Jews, the persistent abuse in polygamous sects. There is a tremendous amount of religious organizations that have permitted children to take second-class status to the protection of their clergy and their reputations. And this is a message to all of them that this movie does not have to be the last movie on cover-up. It may well be the definitive movie on the cover-up in the Catholic context, in Boston at least, but it is not the last word on the ways in which organizations have been covering up abuse for decades. And what they've seen is that there's a market and there is a critical audience that is willing to pay attention, and Hollywood is willing to pay attention. And those messages are powerful. And as I say, my hope is that now survivors will get allies, which they never had before.
Now, who would you identify as an ally? The press?
Well, at this point, some are allies, and there are still some that are not. The press, the editors in the press that have become weary with this issue have not adequately covered the ways in which abuse happens under the same paradigm in many, many, many other settings. Now, we've had a series of stories about private schools, especially very elite private schools. We've had stories about Penn State, about Olympic schools.
Right.
And so we're seeing the paradigm play out. But I think that the editors have made the mistake of thinking that there is a saturation point on this. We are still learning the ground facts about all of this. And so we really do need very close attention to these issues. And when the next wave comes forward, it's not just the same old story. It's another institution, and it is another set of victims and even more suffering. And by pretending that it's all just one thing, they minimize the suffering, but I also minimize the ability of the American public to be truly educated about this, which is really an epidemic.
You know, I remember very well when the Watergate story broke, and these two young journalists, with the help of their editor, who encouraged them, broke the story. And across the country, there's not many editors who are willing to make that risk, to do that risk, to say, okay, you guys go out and, you know, here's the tip that I've got. You go out and, you know, see what you can find. Editors are risk averse. Do you think over time that will change?
Well, I think that we are changing. And the biggest change is that there used to be a time when Americans believed that the prevalence of sex abuse was very small. It rarely happens. It's a one-off thing, that if there is an event, that perpetrator doesn't have a lot of victims. And we have seen increasingly important instruction to the public that actually one in four girls and one in six boys is sexually abused, and a lot of these perpetrators have 70 to 150 victims. And so this is a terrible problem, and if you don't stop this perpetrator, they may well abuse right into their 80s. So the message that's coming out is better public education, which means better protection of children, but also better knowledge on the part of our legislators to pass the laws that will protect children instead of just institutions.
Now, in recent history, what would happen was if there was questionable action by a priest, they would be transferred to another diocese.
I think that the diocese has gotten better at being able to report abuse, but we still see in a number of circumstances that the there's a foot dragging, and the foot dragging is putting children at risk.
Well, yes, it is. It's putting children at risk. And the people who are doing the foot dragging, the people that are making the transfers, the priests that are making the transfers, have to know that that particular priest that they're transferring will harm children in another community. And
yeah,
I think that's
right.
Transferring
was the way that they handled it. Yeah, but the transfer happened after the failure to believe the children and the willingness to believe the priest who said, oh, no, it didn't really happen. And so we're now in a different era. Now at least there's this requirement of reporting. But in addition to the requirement to report, there's this awareness that if you don't do something about this priest, he's going to embarrass you in the future. And I do think that that has provided some help. But at the same time, we still have massive cover-up. And some of the worst cover-up, of course, is in New York State, where the largest number of priests who sexually abuse children in the city of New York, those names have never been released to the public. Cardinal Dolan has said that he released those names to prosecutors, but the prosecutors are not protecting the public when they don't release those names. And so long as those names are secret and there's no disclosure from the New York City Archdiocese, it really is the largest cache of material that's out there and totally undisclosed.
You're talking the entire country. New York City is one of the worst?
Yes. New York City
is,
in my view, the worst. It is the largest archdiocese with the least amount of transparency.
Yes, and we've got the newspapers, the most respected newspaper in the country, the New York Times. We've got all of the broadcast news, headquarters in New York, and you're saying that's a massive problem?
That's right, and the reason it's a massive problem is that the media is never enough. The elected officials, all the way from the governor through the state legislature and through the mayors and the district attorneys, they must all turn to this issue. And basically what's happened in the state of New York is that all those powers have operated to protect themselves instead of protecting children. And so New York is one of the worst states in the country for justice for child sex abuse victims. It's down there with Alabama, Mississippi, and Michigan. And so, one of the biggest cover-ups is New York City, and one of the worst states for justice for child sex abuse victims is New York State.
And is that because of the statute of limitations law?
That's right. Now, the statute of limitations has been so short, it is virtually impossible for most victims to come forward in time to charge their perpetrator unless it is the highest level felony. And there is, for all those statute of limitations that expired, we need to revive the civil statute of limitations. That's the only shot at justice. But right now, if you're in your mid-20s, it's over for you in New York. You are not going to get justice. And there are millions of victims, not just of the Catholic Church, but in many settings, that are being ignored and being silenced by the Catholic Church's lobbyists, along with Agudah Israel, in which they are arguing to the state legislature, protect our secrets. And so far, the Republicans in New York and Albany have been more than willing to protect those who are hiding the abuse instead of forcing transparency.
Then you've got to be talking about the New York State Senate. Am I correct?
Yes.
Well, so I'm speechless. Tell us, Marcy, a little bit about your book, Justice Denied.
Well, I was brought in on some of the early clergy sex abuse cases as an expert on the First Amendment. And while those issues were intellectually interesting, what I was noticing is that even if a priest had admitted to the abuse, even if the archdiocese had all of the records, and even if the victim had a tremendous amount of corroborating evidence, there was usually this ridiculous technicality that was the only thing standing in the way of justice, and that was the statute of limitations. And it was a problem across the United States. And so my naive idea at the time was that this was such an obvious injustice that I would write the book. It would clearly explain why it is that we must eliminate the statute of limitations for child sex abuse. And everybody would see the wisdom in it, and then I would go back to working on other arcane academic issues. Well, much to my surprise, it turned out that there are enemies to statute of limitations reform for children, and they are deep-pocket, organized, largely religious organizations, but also some chambers of commerce in some states, and also the teachers' unions. And so once I realized that this was such an obvious fix with terrible problems, but it was going to be blocked by those in power, I decided that I would dedicate my career to trying to move these laws in a way that will protect children and inform parents who the hidden predators are. And so I run the website sol-reform.com, for the purpose of tracking all 50 states, and what we're seeing is improvement in almost every state except New York, Alabama, Mississippi, and Michigan.
So, oh my God, we're up there, like, you know, we're supposed to be one of the more, I don't mean to sound elitist, but we're supposed to be an enlightened state, and you say we're in the bottom, the really bottom, as far as children are concerned. Now, what would the Chamber of Commerce have in not seeing the statute of limitations lifted?
Well, what's happened in some of the states is that the religious entities have backed off and the insurance industry has stepped in to say they don't want to have to pay on the policies that were in place at the time of the sexual abuse of the children. And so they persuade the Chamber of Commerce to then lobby against the bills. And they did this in Georgia, and it was completely ineffective. They have been doing it in Oklahoma and in Texas, and it's sad. It's very sad that our free market would be so interested in making sure we protect the identities of child predators. But we're seeing change. And with a movie like Spotlight getting Best Picture of the Year, I think all of these lobbyists who are lobbying to shut down the information about child sex abuse see that they're on a timeline. And it's getting shorter and shorter. And so I see a bright future for justice for child sex abuse victims, but it will require states like New York to take an about face and to put children and finding hidden predators ahead of bishops and cardinals.
Now, in the state of New York, what can an average citizen do to change things to make it better for children in New York State?
The best thing that they could do is contact their elected representative and say, where do you stand on the Child Victims Act? It's been introduced year after year. Representative Marge Markey has been the person who has been backing this. She is Catholic and is elected each time, even with large majorities, even though she's fighting the bishops on this. But what do you think about the Child Victims Act? And when that representative comes back to them and says, I don't want to hurt the church, or I'm going to protect the institutions. Our voters really need to say, wait a minute, who's protecting the children? And, you know, New York voters need to make it clear they really do want to know who the hidden predators are. They don't now, especially in New York City. And in order to find that out, there has to be movement, and it's going to have to take representatives and senators in New York with a vision and a willingness to put children ahead of lobbyists and ahead of the Catholic Conference.
Now, you'll be keeping an eye on what happens in New York State, correct, Marcy?
Yes.
Okay, after the session is over, like in July, would you come back on Focus on Albany and talk about what has happened in this legislative session and efforts for the benefit of the children?
Sounds good. I'd love to do that.
Thank you, Marcy. You've been listening to Marcy Hamilton on Focus on Albany. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. And if you have a comment about this show, go to hashtag Focus on Albany and share your thoughts. Marcy, I look forward to talking to you again. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much.
Bye.